This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Perhaps you can trace your family history in our state through multiple generations. Or maybe you're a transplant who can remember first crossing the state line into the Green Mountain State. Around the turn of the last century, a small group of children experienced a unique journey to Vermont. They were orphans, foundlings, rounded up in major cities and put on a train to rural communities around the country. Of the estimated 20,000 children shipped to rural parts of the U.S. in the late 1800s and early 1900s, just over 120 of them came to Vermont. Joining me now to tell us a little bit more about these orphan trains is Daniel Bean. He's professor emeritus of biology at St. Michael's College, but he's been researching history and giving talks on this little-known piece of it for several years. Dan, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Oh, well, hi. Thanks for having me.
So I understand you can actually trace your very existence back to these orphan trains. Your father was one of the orphans sent from an orphanage in New York City to Enosburg, Vermont in 1905. How did you discover this piece of your family history?
Well, my father was killed in a car accident when I was a junior in high school. And a little later, my mother handed myself and my four siblings envelopes and said this, and gave us a little history of Dad's background. How he had been born in New York City, and we thought his mother had died in childbirth. And then his father, who was from, they were from Halifax, Nova Scotia, we discovered, on their birth certificate. So his father put him into the home for the New York Foundling Hospital, which is run by the Sisters of Charity of St. Vincent's in New York City. And that's about all I knew about it until quite a few years later when I decided to do a little bit more homework on it and what it eventually ended up with by doing these talks on not only Dad, but the other children who were on the train and another train that went to East Fairfield.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like you were trying to piece together your father's story after his death. And since there was so little to go on, you kind of had to open up this research and figure out a little bit more of the history and do some digging of your own. And what you discovered was that thousands of kids were sort of collected. Some were collected from hospitals, some from orphanages, others from actually living on the streets where they were sort of living rough, and then sent ostensibly for a better life to the countryside. But were there people waiting at the ends of those train lines to adopt or take in these children, or were they just sort of sent to the country?
Well, I'm where I'm here now, up in Newport, getting ready to do the same talk, and so I'm having trouble hearing you, but I think you want to know something about the background. Well, let me tell you what I do with the talk, and that might answer your question. I do a history. How did I get? First thing I had to do is, what were these things called, orphan trains? So I had to dig around. Fortunately, in 2000, a book came out called Charles Loring Brace, The Children He Saved and Didn't Save, Orphan Train Riders. And that gave me a very good background. And then I started digging into the children who were on the trains. I was fortunate because we talked to people at high school reunions, and the word spread, and other people had some information. So they would send me notes and say, this is my great-aunt or my uncle or my grandfather. And I started thinking. The original list I had 20 children going to Enosburg. There were only 8, but phonetic spelling caused a lot of problems, so they appeared 2 or 3 times.
Dan, let me ask you this. Did when these young people, some of them were quite young, 3 or 4, some of them were teenagers, when they were put on these trains and sent to the country, did they have people at the other end who were waiting to adopt them?
Yes. The children, the early trains, the whole program started in 1854 from the Children's Aid Society in New York City. And Charles Loring Brace had set up for people to go out. He contacted people in towns. They formed committees. They asked for people to adopt him. And by the time my father came along, the New York Foundling Hospital arranged with the Children's Aid Society to bring the children up to, and when they usually sent to Louisiana or New England, where the Catholics were. And by the time they did that, for my dad's group in 1905, a priest would usually come up to the villages, or they'd contact a pastor up here, tell him that they had children. He would ask people if they'd like to adopt some, take their orders. Many, many people ask for specific children. They want a little blue-eyed, blonde boy or girl. And the sisters would try to fill the order and put them on a train with a couple of adults. And then they would send them up. They didn't send them directly to Enosburg. The train left New York City and would stop at various towns all the way up. Enosburg happened to be the last stop for that railroad. So when Dad got there, six of the children were taken. Two were not asked for. They were put on as a baker's dozen. And the nurse asked, anyone take them home for the night? So the little girl went home with someone else. There were seven girls and my father. And my father went home with Mamie and Pepe, who wouldn't give him up in the morning. Because Mamie had just lost a little boy earlier that year, and she wanted to keep him. So Pepe said, treat him like your own and you can have him. And that's about as formal as it got.
So it sounds like
very fortunate.
Yeah, it sounds like in your father's case, he found a loving family. There were some children throughout the country who were basically put into indentured servitude. They worked on farms. They did other kinds of work that were needed in the homestead or at the farm. So was this ethical? I mean, was this seen at the time as a nice way to help young people in the cities who otherwise weren't going to get a break at life? Or was there something a little bit seedy about this?
Well, that's what my whole talk is about. It was at the time this all started in the mid-1800s. In Manhattan alone, there were 3,000 street children. That's a conservative estimate. Some people put the figure for all the boroughs at 30 to 50,000 children living on the street, had no parents or had run away from home because of abuse or something else. The police would pick them up. At one time, there were 4,000 children in prison. And these were kids, there were about 900 of them were younger than 10 years old. They simply came out more hard than they were then. So the Children's Aid Society was formed to try to do something about it. The whole idea of the trains wasn't new with British. The Home for Little Wanderer in Boston had been doing it since the early 1800s. The British had been shipping shiploads of orphan trains and nuts and even children who had parents to Canada for years. In fact, the Parliament passed a law that said that they didn't need parents' permission to send them to Canada. Now, that's pretty bad. And Germany had workhouses. Originally, Brace had set up training schools and everything for the children. And there are some horrible examples, but there are some very good successes. And if, for the older children, if they did not like where they were, they could simply go to the railroad station and say, I'm going back to New York. And these were younger teenagers, 13, 14, and the conductor would punch a ticket for them and send them back. But there were some real disasters. If I were to put them on a ballot, I'm not sure where it would come out.
Hmm.
But you can read some glorious results. In the case of the Home for Little Wanderers, these children were all pre-screened, pre-adopted, and it seemed to work a lot better. But we're talking about the 1900s. And by 1910, most of the trains were being shut down. The Children's Aid Society were going into foster homes. They were working with families, much as what we're doing today.
Well, it's all supremely interesting stuff, and I love hearing your personal connection to this history and how it led you into this research about something that's not very well known, certainly around here. That's Daniel Bean telling us a little bit about the orphan trains, what were known as the orphan trains, which were officially stopped in 1929. Thanks very much to Daniel Bean for telling us about that.